This is The Rundown. The Rundown. Hosted by Luke Lipinski. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Live from the Auction Community Studios for the next 2 hours. Luke Lipinski here with you. Michaela Perkins behind the glass. Sarah Cazell dancing. Both of you dancing. Now I feel like I should have been dancing. I didn't know we were doing this.
It's always a dance party on The Rundown.
I know. I always forget. It's been so long since I've done a show. We figured this out. It's been since Friday. I don't even know if I remember how to do it.
Well, you better, because you're the best sportscaster in the state of Arizona.
Yeah, I figured you might bring that up. The bar has been set possibly too high for the next 2 hours. All right, I want to get into the Diamondbacks to start things off here. They just knocked off the Baltimore Orioles 5-2. Did not finish the sweep like I was hoping they would, because they lost last night, which ironically is the game I was at. But they do take 2 of 3 from Baltimore. As it stands right now, they are 2.5 back of a wild card spot. That in itself is not bad, but the fact that the trade deadline is now less than a week away, it's a week from today, but earlier in the day, so technically less than a week away, the pressure certainly on this team to go one way or the other, it's been pretty intense. I mean, it was there last night. Merrill Kelly, after the game, even brought up how, you know, maybe there's been too much scrutiny on the wild card for the middle of July. And he was saying it more so in respect to the focus outside of the clubhouse. But there's been more pressure on this team in the last few weeks than there typically is in the middle of July, because they're in sort of a unique situation. I mean, the deadline hits everybody on July 31st, certainly, but some teams know they're going for it. Some teams know they're out of it. Other teams are going for it, but they may end up missing the playoffs. I mean, it's not like the Diamondbacks are the only team in this position, but they are in a very unique spot in the sense that a lot of people, even a lot of Diamondbacks fans, want them to sell, and yet they are at this moment a game above 500 and 2.5 back of a wild card spot. You know, 1.5 back in Milwaukee. Milwaukee's not selling. Tied with the Giants. Now, Milwaukee's not selling because they're in the Central, so even if they don't get the wild card, they could feasibly go on a run and win their division, which would obviously be even better because you get a series instead of a one-and-done game. The Diamondbacks are 2.5 back of Philly. Philly's very clearly in bye mode. St. Louis is currently tied with Philly. So it's, you know, if you just look at the standings on July 24th and you see where the Diamondbacks are, you're like, all right, you know, still relevant, still in this, still a chance to make the playoffs, and then you take your chance when you get there. But from Mike Hazen's point of view and that front office's point of view, they have said they wanted to see the team separate themselves from some of these other contenders before the deadline by actually winning, by stringing wins together, not just by hanging around with other teams around them losing and, you know, just hovering at 500. Because big picture, if you are just a 500 team, do you have a realistic shot to win the World Series? And that's obviously their ultimate goal. And if not, then there's that school of thought that you should be getting something out of the season and trading away some of the pieces you have, assuming you can get a good return for them. We'll get deeper into that later on the show, but I want to get to specifically the game today. D-backs back one game above 500. They beat Baltimore 5-2. Fireworks late in this game, though. Arizona was up 3-1. They ended up going up 5-2 in the seventh, and they hold on, but Archie Bradley comes in the eighth and puts a couple guys on, but gets out of it. Doesn't give up any runs. Greg Holland comes in the ninth and puts the first two batters on via walk, and that's it. I mean, Torrey pulls him. They go to Yoan Lopez. This is what Lovello said afterwards, talking about Greg Holland.
Greg's been exceptional for us. You know, he's had some really, really good moments, and he's closed out some games, and we're going to rely on him. We're going to continue to rely on him. He's still our closer. Nothing's happened. Nothing's changed. I just need to make a tough decision today. And I'm sure other managers have been confronted with that same sort of a situation, whether it's this year, last year, or the year before. I'm not really concerned about it. I was mostly concerned about today.
See, where it's interesting is they would typically go to Yoan Lopez probably in that eighth. I mean, he was clearly their best arm out of the bullpen all season until this month, and now he's trailed off a little bit. Archie's actually come back and gotten better here over the last few weeks, so they went to Bradley in the eighth, and you figure at that point they're just thinking Bradley in the eighth, Holland in the ninth, and then that's it. We didn't even see Yoan Lopez. But because they had to go away from Holland, they went to Lopez. Lopez came in and was outstanding, got the save, his first of the year. This was Carson Kelly, courtesy of Fox Sports Arizona, on what he saw from Greg Holland.
Yeah, I mean, Greg, going out there, I think he, the ball wasn't coming out like I've seen it in the past, and Greg's always been, he's been pretty good for us so far, and Torrey didn't like what he saw right from the get-go, so Lopi came in and backed him up, but overall, a very good team win, and our guys have been great for us all year.
Look, I mean, overall, Greg Holland has been pretty decent for the D-backs this year. He did have that game, though, a couple weeks ago where he ended up just walking, what was it, four straight guys, and then they went to, I believe it was TJ McFarland who came in and ended up walking Cody Bellinger to walk in the winning run. You know, if you're Torrey Lovello, these games mean a lot right now, and you see Holland go out there and walk the first two batters, you know, maybe that's a shorter hook than Lovello would typically have, certainly than maybe even a year ago, and a lot of his critics say Lovello's a little bit too loyal to his guys. But today, three-run lead against Baltimore, they must not have liked what they were seeing from Holland, because that's, they're not messing around there. To pull Holland that quickly and go with Yoan Lopez doesn't mean Holland's done. Doesn't mean he's not the closer of this team anymore, unless they trade him in a week, which is very possible. But it doesn't mean Lopez is the closer, because that's what's weird. You would look at that and you'd say, like, okay, well, if they're going away from Holland, then Lopez is the guy. Maybe. But they weren't even going to Lopez in the eighth inning. They were going to Bradley. So I'm not going to read too much into it, because it's one game, which is essentially what Lovello said after the game. It's just one game, and he had to make that adjustment in the moment. Ultimately, a big win for the D-backs. It is strange, because we don't know what to make of their wins right now. We don't know if these are just, okay, that's nice, you're hanging around, but guys are about to get traded here, or if these wins still matter. I can tell you they certainly still matter to the guys playing the games. And Torrey Lovello as well. All right, across town in Glendale. Technically, I guess training camp started today. There was the running drills. Michaela looks excited about the running drills.
That would be a day I'd be like, oh, I'm sick. I'm sorry. I can't make it. I don't know. I'm not coming in today. That's, nope, not running.
Okay, that's fair. This might be why you'll never play in the NFL.
Absolutely
maybe.
Not.
But the real thing starts tomorrow, training camp. There's availability tomorrow. We're going to see the 2019 Cardinals for the first time really, truly together. I mean, we saw them in OTAs and all the voluntary stuff back in June. But this is football season for a lot of people, really, including the players and the coaches, starts tomorrow. So it's an exciting time, obviously. We're not getting a whole lot from Cliff Kingsbury, though. He is... He's played it really close to the vest so far since taking over, and I don't know if that's just because this is his first year as an NFL head coach and he hasn't actually coached a game yet, and that's totally reasonable if that's the case, or if he's just not going to ever give us much of an answer. But this is what he said today when asked about Kyler Murray, how much playing time we're going to see from him here.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, I think, is you want to feel great about guys understanding and executing the offense when the lights are on, but you also don't want to give away what you're doing, and you want to protect some of your players. And so we'll try to find a healthy balance of that and making sure Kyler's getting a ton of great reps in practice and quality reps in the games as well.
Yeah, look, I mean, he called it the million-dollar question. I would say it's the biggest question facing the Cardinals during training camp. And obviously, we're going to have a bunch of different stories for you from Camp K. We've got shows out there starting tomorrow. There's going to be a lot of different questions and issues with the team that are discussed here in the next few weeks before that first preseason game, certainly. And there's some big ones, and we'll get into some of them on the show tonight, too. But the biggest one to me, because it is so different than from years past, is how much they're willing to show in the preseason. You basically have to weigh the value of hiding your offense from the rest of the league versus the value of getting your offense familiar with what it's trying to run. And the more I think about it, the more I really think you got to get your guys ready. You got to get everybody on the same page. If teams watch the film of you in the preseason and that takes away your edge in week one against the Lions, all right, whatever. I mean, that's a big deal. I get that. But how long can you hide your offense from the rest of the league? Once you play in week one, everybody's going to have seen it. So to me, and I've gone back and forth on this quite a bit, Look, I'm not running my full offense and showing everybody everything in the preseason. Most intelligent teams don't do that, even if they have an established offense. But I'm not sacrificing my players all getting on the same page. Like, it's cool that Kyler Murray is familiar with this offense more so than a typical rookie quarterback would be as he steps into the league. But the rest of the players on the offense are not very familiar with it. And you can learn a lot in practice, certainly, and you can get some of your timing right, but we're going to actually have to see it. I mean, there's just so many smaller moving parts, and just everybody knowing how to react if there's an audible, and everybody knowing where to be, and if you have to change personnel on the fly. And that's the sort of stuff I don't want to be working out in week one. If you were playing all your games, your regular season games, and nobody could watch the film somehow, then that would be different. Then, okay, yeah, let's try to surprise teams all season long. But essentially, if you hide your offense from everybody in the preseason, it's just so you can surprise Detroit in week one. That's basically all it is. And the trade-off is you might not have your guys in sync because you're trying to hide too much. So yeah, I'm not showing too much, but I'm not going to let the fact that the Lions are going to be able to watch film of me dictate how I run my team, because this is a very pivotal training camp and preseason for this Cardinals. It's not just for this season. I mean, I want everybody in place and comfortable and running with this. So even beyond this year, when we get to the end of the 2019 season, we're all very confident this offense is good to go and potentially be explosive in 2022. To me, that all starts tomorrow. I don't want to delay that until week one. All right, we come back. Mentioned the D-backs, a big win today. I talked to Mike Farron, pre- and post-game host of the D-backs, and get his thoughts on the trade deadline and everything else coming up for this team. Next, it's the Rundown with Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Welcome back to the show. Luke Lipinski here with you for the next 2 hours, talking about a Diamondbacks win today, talking about Cardinals camp starting tomorrow. I want to get into expectations for the Valley teams a little bit later on in the show. It's funny. I mean, obviously they're all over the place depending on your outlook on each of the team and which team you're talking about. But it feels like, especially when you look at the four main ones with the Cardinals starting up tomorrow and the Coyotes starting up soon, D-backs obviously playing and all the speculation and the negative feedback on the Suns nationally, but also the cautious optimism locally with the fact that they have turned things around, potentially at least at the point guard position. Different standards for the different teams. I want to get into that a little bit later on in the show. But right now, joined on the Coulter Automotive Group sports line by the pre- and post-game host, does a lot of play-by-play for the D-backs as well, Mike Farron joining us on the line. Mike, thanks for the time. What are your impressions of this team right now following the series where they take 2 of 3 from Baltimore?
Well, it wasn't pretty, but I mean, there are no all wins are beautiful. That's the way you look at it. You know, I mean, it's the team's in a pretty similar spot to where it was and where it has been really since the middle of June, which is right about 500 and, you know, still in the mix in the wild card race. So I'm not sure that anything has really changed over the last, 7 weeks. I think it's pretty much status quo at this point, which has been the case for just about everybody that's involved in that race, maybe with the exception of San Francisco and St. Louis, who've both been playing good baseball of late.
You know, obviously the discussion has been centered around whether this team should be buyers or sellers or stand pat. In your mind, is it as simple as that, or is it maybe a little more complex with this year's team?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit more complex just in the sense that you know, I don't know that it's necessarily one or the other. I mean, it might be in the end. I think some of it depends on how, you know, things go against Miami this weekend and, you know, what ends up happening with other teams over the course of the next several days. But I think for the most part, you're just, you know, like it's, you know, you're trying to build an organization that's capable of winning the World Series, right? That's what the goal is. And that's the stated goal publicly, basically from the moment Mike Hazen and his group got here. And, you know, right now that involves, you know, adding talent to the organization however they can that's going to be here to be able to compete. So if it means having to trade a player or two because it's a deal that they can't pass up, then I think that's a possibility. If it means you know, holding on to most of the core through the rest of the year and maybe, you know, trading a few guys who could be free agents after the season, I think that's a possibility. Or, you know, even just adding, you know, some arms to be able to help. I think all of those things are still within the realm of possibility. I don't think that any decision has been made on it. And I think unless they get pushed to the brink by a deal that they can't pass up either to trade away players from the major league roster or add somebody from the outside, I think we're going to continue to see this holding pattern into the final hours ahead of the deadline.
You know, when you look at the long-term projection of this team and you know, what Mike Hazen and that front office are trying to do, and then you look at what the players have done on the field this year, and yeah, they're a 500 team or they're a game above 500 right now, but they are still very much in the wild card race. I talked to Derek Hall a couple weeks ago, and he said one of the things that he is just most, and I don't even want to say concerned or worried about, but that he's aware of, is if you do make trades and you come off as sellers, you have to communicate that pretty clearly to the actual players in the clubhouse, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. I mean, I think it's, you know, I mean, players aren't dumb. I mean, they know what's going on, and I think that there are certain players that are on the roster that would, you know, it would be a major blow if they were to be dealt. So, you know, I mean, I think it's very difficult to buy and sell for a number of reasons. One, it takes a lot of work to try and do both things, and two, I think it's, trying to make sure that the message is received in the clubhouse that, hey, listen, you know, we still believe in this group, even though we've taken away a piece that was on it. You know, look at these things that we've done to help improve where we're at. It's not always easy to do, especially when you've got a group that's pretty cohesive. You know, there's not it's not like there are talented troublemakers in that clubhouse that, you know, there's a relief from a player being dealt. So I do think it's mindful. You have to be mindful of that. But I also think you have to understand that, you know, this is not all that different than any other workplace dynamic. And I think back to a situation that the Los Angeles Dodgers had a few years ago where A.J. Ellis was a very important part of their team. Maybe not the best player that they had, but he was Kershaw's best friend and his personal catcher and a very important guy. And they traded him because they felt like they could upgrade at that spot and added, you know, Carlos Ruiz from the Phillies. And, you know, there was all this concern that the Dodgers were going to collapse, and they ended up going out and winning the division pretty handily and playing better after they got Ruiz. So I think in the end, you know, a good chunk of it is about talent. And then the secondary part is just ensuring that you still have a good working environment. I do think that we can put too much emphasis on clubhouse chemistry. It's just like any other workplace in that if it's a good place to go to work, you enjoy it more. And so, like, there's a lot of different ways to have a good workplace environment, and I think Torrey Lovello helps to create that anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Talking to Mike Farron. Mike, how do you assess the farm system at this point and just relative to where it was a couple years ago when Mike Hazen took over?
Well, much improved. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is that it's, you know, it's very good. I saw, you know, Fangraphs today did their evaluations, and Eric Longenhagen, who I know, you know, Luke, who lives here in the Valley, is – I think one of the better public, you know, minor league analysts, and they have them rated as the seventh best farm system in baseball now following this draft.
Wow.
And I think that's, you know, while there isn't necessarily that guy yet that stands out that you go, man, that's going to be the superstar. I don't know if they need him. Marte might end up being that superstar, but you know, Jazz Chisholm, while he's had a bad year, at least statistically, is still a guy that I think both the organization and people outside the organization are high on because of the tool set. You know, I think guys like Dalton Varsho are very good. I think the draft that they had this year was excellent. The draft they had last year was fantastic. Alec Thomas, I saw, just moved to the top 100 on MLB.com's list. And so, like, you're starting to see waves of talent, albeit most of it at the A ball or below level right now, that I think are going to be able to have a pretty positive impact within a couple of years. And I think what they've done in terms of investing in some of the decisions they've made in Latin America and helping, you know, some of the players who were already here improve, and then going out and adding talent specifically over the last two drafts has really been a huge step in the right direction for this organization.
Well, that's good news to hear after what it was when they took over a little over 2 years ago. I'm not going to go through all the names that they could feasibly trade, but just specifically with Zach Greinke, with the way his contract is set up and the way he is still pitching probably even better this year than the last couple of years with the Diamondbacks, if you did ultimately want to trade him, is there a case to be made he actually might have more value next year at this time if he continues to pitch the way he's been pitching, and the fact then that it wouldn't cost as much for a team taking him on, but they'd still have him for a year and a half?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great point. I mean, I think if there is that case that can be made. You know, because the financial outlay isn't quite as significant either. So, you know, you're still looking at it, and probably the cost of what it would take to acquire him is probably not quite as great. So, yeah, I think that there is that case that it could be made. You know, I think he's earned his money. Like, he's been fantastic. He's been one of the seven best pitchers in the National League, I think, since the start of that deal. And so there's a lot of reasons why it's difficult to make that trade. You know, he has a no trade clause that limits him to 15 teams. There's no indication that he's willing to waive it. He's pretty happy here from what I understand. So, you know, like that's, you know, a positive in that regard. And he's earned that right as contractually to be able to you know, reject trades to a group of teams. There's also a significant amount of deferred compensation in the deal, which needs to be worked through in any kind of trade. And then there's the fact that he's been really good and he's expensive. And generally what happens is, you know, the quality of the return depends on how much you pay down for a guy. But when you've pitched as well as he is, I think the Diamondbacks aren't unreasonable to ask for teams to take on the money and give up talent. And I think it's very, very difficult to try and find that amount. Now, maybe if they got to that point, they would be willing to eat some of it, but I think it's highly unlikely that Zach gets moved. The percentages would be, chances would be very, very small. And, you know, as long as he's here, they still have a fighting chance, I think, because he anchors that rotation so well.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike, last one for you. Archie Bradley, I believe it's 8 straight appearances now, and obviously he struggled at the start of the year, and he struggled for a good portion of last year as well, but his last 8 appearances, he has not given up an earned run, counting today. What have you seen different from Archie in the last month?
Well, I mean, I think it's been a willingness to use 3 pitches now. I mean, the development of his changeup is, I think, pretty important. I think that's helped. I mean, I think he's had a little bit fastball command. I mean, he's talked about making some adjustments with the data in terms of release point. You know, today he scuffled a little bit in that he loaded the bases, you know, with 2 outs. And I think the walks are still a little bit of a concern with him. But, you know, he seems to be pitching with a lot more confidence. And I'm curious to see if, you know, today was the fact that he was able to get out of that jam, if that helps to build confidence for him to be able to pitch in big spots, because they really need him to be able to pitch in some of the biggest spots, because, you know, they have very few arms like that. And all of a sudden, if Archie gets back to pitching at a high level, you know, adding him to Yoan Lopez, that's a pretty, you know, pretty dynamic 1-2 punch ahead of Greg Holland finishing games.
Absolutely. Mike Farron, good stuff as always. Always enjoy talking to you. Thanks for the time, man.
No problem, Luke. Take care.
Thanks a lot. That's Mike Farron joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. That's Coulter, Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Coming up, are we setting our standards high enough for our sports teams in this city? That's next. It's the Rundown with Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We're like right on the edge of the best time of year for sports, because you're still going to have baseball going. Training camp for the Cardinals starts tomorrow. Pac-12 media was today. We're not that far from Coyotes hockey and Suns basketball. I mean, this is coming up on the best time of the year. It just got me thinking, especially from doing runs on all the different shows over the last few weeks here, and just kind of getting all the different hosts' perspectives on what they expect from the teams in the coming year, and hearing some from the fans. And it started with all the criticism the Suns have gotten nationally, but then, you know, sometimes it swings the other way too far, and locally we're like, oh, we should celebrate the fact that the Suns got a point guard. And it's like, well, we should, but what are your expectations? And kind of ran through all 4 of the main teams, ASU football, ASU basketball as well. I know there's other teams in town. I just tweeted out, I'll retweet it from the show account. You can always tweet into the show at Rundown987. I'm all for hearing your feedback on this. It doesn't have to be for every team. But what is your definition of success for the Valley teams for the next year? I know it's a little bit different for the D-backs because they're already playing, but I'll just give you mine. For the Cardinals, I'd say 5 or 6 wins or more, obviously, and the offense looking good. Kind of touched on that earlier in the show, but the biggest thing for me with the Cardinals this season, like, yeah, make the playoffs, that'd be awesome. But if they come out of this season with, let's say, 6 or more wins, and the offense is legit, like what they're trying to do by the end of the season, we realize either it was revolutionary and it's working, Or maybe it wasn't. It didn't have to be totally revolutionary. I don't need that, but it's successful. Like, it's productive, and we feel good about it going into next year. We kind of feel good about it now because it's exciting, but we also have so many questions that it's not really a stable feeling. It's just, hey, this could be exciting. So that's mine for the Cardinals. Michaela, do you have anything on the Cardinals?
You just kind of mentioned how there's, like, good feelings around the Cardinals right now. And yeah. I have this theory where, like, Valley sports fans get their hopes up so high before, like, regular season starts for their sports teams, only to have their souls absolutely crushed. So I'm kind of hoping maybe we've learned our lesson and we can kind of set the bar a little bit lower. That way, if they don't meet expectations, it's not that big of a deal. But if they exceed expectations, it's super exciting.
Well,
but if I'm being honest, I don't think the Cardinals are going to win 5 games. I think it's asking too much.
They don't win 5. You have
almost a new, like, a completely new coaching staff,
yeah.
a brand new rookie quarterback,
yeah.
a bunch of pieces that are rookies that you're going to be relying on. I don't know. And not to mention one of your best players is suspended currently.
Yeah,
that's
the one that hurts the most.
I think it's just asking too much. I don't know. I think people just expect Kyler Murray to be the next, like, Patrick Mahomes, but, like, I don't think it's possible.
Even if he is, he probably won't be Patrick Mahomes in his rookie year, certainly. So, look, this is not my prediction for what they're going to do. This is just, I would feel good about the Cardinals if we're looking back a year from now and they won 6 or more and the offense is set heading into next year.
I just think they need to go through so many growing pains.
Yeah.
And people are going to be impatient and disappointed, but I don't think it's going to be, like, instant magic.
Well, that's the thing. It's, you know, that's what's great about this. You talk to 3 different Cardinals fans, and they'll give you 3 different definitions of what success looks like for that team this year. And it's you know, it's the same thing with all the different teams in town. Like, for the Coyotes, my expectation is playoffs at this point. They've been building toward this for a couple years. They missed by 4 points last year. They had a ton of injuries. They got better in the offseason. The teams around them in the Western Conference got better. But for me, the Coyotes, it's simple. Like, I expect playoffs. The Suns, 30 wins and DeAndre Ayton taking the next step, to me, is a success relative to where they are right now. Like, if that happens in the next year, if 3 years from now we're still talking about, hey, the Suns might win 30 this year and DeAndre Ayton's taking the next step, okay, well, that's obviously a joke. But right now, if we're sitting here doing the show July 24th of 2020 and the Suns finished with 32 wins, let's say they went 32-50 this year, okay, that's not good, but it's a step forward, and DeAndre Ayton really is evolving as a premier big man in this league, I'll consider that a success relative to where they are right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think 30 wins is reasonable, maybe a little far out of reach. But if 3 years from now, like you said, we're still hoping for a 30-win season, I think Suns fans are going to burn the organization to the ground. They're going to be so mad.
Yeah.
And I think rightfully so. It's been 8 years since the Suns have had a good season. Enough is enough.
It's I've wrestled with this because it's been, what, 9 since they've made the playoffs, but really it's been 4 since things got embarrassing. And I understand that if you are just driving through town and you are not a Suns fan, you don't have any ties to the Valley, and you are a Knicks fan because you're worse off, but if you're a fan of some team that's dear, Milwaukee Bucks fan, you're laughing at us saying, okay, I want 30 wins this year and the guy we took #1 overall last year to take a step forward. But honestly, they haven't won more than 24 games in a season with Devin Booker. There's a team around him now. There's an NBA team around Booker, and it's being built around Booker and Ayton. So, yeah, I get the 30 wins is not a lofty goal. But right now, yeah, 30 wins and Ayton improving again, that's a tangible step towards what they're ultimately trying to accomplish. Let's see real quick here. D-backs. The D-backs is the toughest one because we don't know which direction they're going in, right?
The D-backs could have their roster would be completely different next season.
Yeah.
So there's no way to be like, well, I don't know what to expect. Like, it's impossible to know.
I will go with, look, if they want to make the wild card, that's fine. I'm not one of those people that feels like they have to get to the World Series. Otherwise, making the playoffs is a waste of time. If they get to the wild card, even if they lose the wild card, if they face Max Scherzer in the first, the one game and they lose to Washington, I mean, it's not the ultimate goal, but I would consider either that a success or, if they get this farm system completely restocked, then a year from now we're talking about this being one of the premier farm systems in baseball. And you just heard Mike Farron on last segment. And he said Fangraphs has them up to 7th in Major League Baseball right now. And Jeff Passan, in a piece for ESPN last week, had them listed as one of the best farm systems in baseball. 2 years ago, they were last. So they're already close to that. And if they trade pieces again here in the next week, that's going to be a loaded farm system.
No, yeah, I definitely agree. I think it'll be super telling what they do at the trade deadline. And if they're stacking their farm system and that's the way they decide to go, I think immediate success can't be expected, but future success for sure.
Yeah, and I do like that their goal ultimately is championships. I know everybody says that, but they have built things in such a way where they are clearly trying to be a World Series contender here in a couple years. Quickly to ASU before we hit the break. ASU basketball, I'll throw it out real quick since it's not really basketball season, but I'll just say tournament. I mean, to me now with Bobby Hurley every year, you should be making the tournament. I'd like a couple wins. I'd like them to at least get to the second round of the tournament, but just make the tournament. I'm still at the point where that's successful to me as somebody that went to ASU. ASU football. The biggest thing for me, you got to have a winning season. You got to go to a bowl game. You did that last year. You got to do that. The biggest thing to me is that you solidify the quarterback position heading into next year. And I know it sure sounds like Jaden Daniels is going to be that guy, but you've got three of the better freshman quarterbacks coming in. You've got Dylan Sterling Cole right now. The biggest thing with ASU football for me is establish one of those freshman quarterbacks as your guy for the next few years.
Do you think 10-3 is a realistic goal for ASU?
I don't think it's insane. It's would they win 8 last year, didn't they?
They won 7. They were 7-6 last year.
Oh, I must have just given them an extra win. I don't think 10-3 is crazy, but it wouldn't be my pick. Is that what you have them at?
Yeah, I mean, like, I know that's, again, being very optimistic, but I think it's possible, and they've improved their roster miles this past off season with their recruits. So I'm hoping that Herm Edwards can work some magic.
Yeah, and look, I mean, after what he did last year, I'm not going to doubt him. We're going to hear from Chris Cartman later on the show. He was on with Burns and Gambo. We'll play a part of that interview, but he had some good stuff to say about them. The biggest thing with ASU is that pro model is working. Recruits and even other college players are looking at them as potentially a feeder system into the NFL, and they played a lot of good freshmen, true freshmen last year that you go through the growing pains as that happens, but it should pay off this year. Now, the problem, of course, this year is you may be going through growing pains at the quarterback position and you don't have N'Keal Harry. But if Jaden Daniels is as good as everybody says he is and those other receivers, they've got some talent at receiver. They just don't have one like true NFL guy like N'Keal was. Those are two big positions, but if you can get by at those spots, you're set at running back. You've got a lot of freshmen that were impact players on defense last year. 10-3 is not crazy. I'd be ecstatic if they go 10-3. I mean, that would obviously be a huge success.
Yeah, I agree. And honestly, I think hiring Herm Edwards is going to prove to be the best decision this program has made in a long time.
And see, that's the thing. If we did this show a year ago and talked about that, most people at best were skeptical. I mean, even I was skeptical. The turning point for me was when they hired Danny Gonzalez. Then it became pretty clear to me that they were, it wasn't just a publicity grab, and that they were doing things the right way. And Danny Gonzalez was so good before he ever even got to ASU. But still, skepticism last year, a lot of question marks with Herm, and now, I mean, the expectations are a lot higher.
Yeah, everyone was saying it was a horrible move last year, and now everyone's like, this is the best thing ever, which I think is also a trend in the Valley. But, I think hiring Herm Edwards and his coaching staff, it's just a huge selling point to potential recruits. Like, yeah. They're so excited to potentially play for him. So yeah. I think it's going to work out for them.
They have, they've built that pretty quickly, that component of the program. When we come back, it's not media ripping the Suns now. It is their peers. We'll figure out if there's any validity to it at all next. It's the Rundown with Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Luke Lipinski back here with you, just reading through some of the responses to that last segment on Twitter. Mike writes in terms of what he would consider a successful season for some of the Valley teams. The Coyotes playoffs, the Cardinals 4 wins. Wow. I didn't think I was that high on the Cardinals with 6 wins, but 4 wins from Mike. Suns, 30 wins. That does seem to be the magic number for them this year. D-backs end the season 2 games below 500. Blitz pickup truck writes in, I think my list is a carbon copy of yours, Luke. Dave writes in, I think your list is reasonable. Real problem is if all your expectations of success occur, what fan is going to be excited about any of these teams other than the Coyotes? That's a fair question. I mean, obviously the Coyotes, when I rattled those six teams off, that's the one I have the highest expectations for because I think they're the closest to being a playoff team. I do think, though, I think if the Cardinals go out there and, I mean, they almost won six games last year. I know it's crazy to say. They almost won six games last year, if not for a couple plays, and they were miserable in 10 of their games last year. Now, the counter to that is they almost won zero games last year, too, and that's very fair. But I don't think it's crazy that that team could win six or seven and be exciting and fill everybody up with, like, legitimate hope for next year. Not just, oh, I hope all these questions go our way, but, like, okay, we saw the Cardinals. You know, I think the biggest thing is going to be, do they catch teams by surprise? How do the teams in their division specifically, but just the other teams in the NFL, respond to that? And then how do the Cardinals respond back to that? I think we're going to see all of that play out this year. Hopefully we see the third one with the Cardinals responding back to everybody adjusting to their offense. As far as the Suns, I mean, I get that 30 wins is not a lofty goal, but it's something they haven't done in 4 years. And if they jump from 19 to 30 wins or more, but let's just say 30 for the sake of argument, it's a big step in the right direction. I mean, they have altered the roster and everything. I mean, they've altered the construction of the team pretty significantly this offseason. And I know they keep bouncing from coach to coach, but Monty Williams is going to be here for a while. And now you've got James Jones established as your GM. He's put his fingerprints all over this team. They have a point guard. I'm looking through this the story on ESPN today, though, and it's by Tim Bontemps, but this is not his opinion. He went through and asked, what is it, 20 coaches, executives, and scouts from across the NBA about the NBA offseason. And he asked him a few questions. One of them is, who's the best player in the NBA of the 20? 12 of them said Kawhi Leonard. It's funny, nobody said LeBron. 12 said Kawhi, 6 said Giannis, 2 said Harden. I feel like we forgot that LeBron was in the league. What move from the summer did you like the most? The majority said the Clippers getting Leonard and Paul George. Listed off a few other ones. This is the one, and I know all the other shows have talked about this today as well, and it's rubbing Suns fans the wrong way. What was the worst move of the summer? So 20 executives, coaches, and scouts. 6 of them said the Knicks offseason. Seems pretty reasonable. It was pretty terrible. 4 of them said Terry Rozier to Charlotte. 6 of them said Ricky Rubio to Phoenix. And that is the one. I don't know what people wanted them to do. I'm all for this team making a splash. If they have to make it a year or two from now, that's fine. They had to get a point guard. So I know it's easy for people that don't follow the Suns closely, that don't live here, that just look and they say, oh, you're paying Ricky Rubio too much money. They needed a point guard. Like, I don't know, what are you going to do? The quote in here is, quote, they paid him a lot of money and he isn't very good, unquote. That's from an Eastern Conference scout. Here's more. Quote, maybe it was the best they could do to finally get a point guard, but you're designed for less than mediocrity, unquote. Yeah, you are. That's what it is when you've won 19 games last year and you've averaged 21 wins a year. But mediocrity for one more year, as long as it's improved mediocrity and it's like a stable step in the right direction, I'll take that. You can look at the Suns offseason and certainly criticize aspects of it. And I get that. I mean, there's certainly elements of it that I would have liked them have done a little bit differently, but adding Ricky Rubio, that doesn't bother me. They had to add a point guard. He's an excellent passer. I get that he's not a great shooter. They've got other guys on this team to shoot. I'm not saying adding Ricky Rubio makes you a championship contender. It doesn't. I get that. Maybe it just makes you respectable. I would go with respectable as opposed to mediocre. But if it makes you respectable, that's a necessary step this team has to take. So I just found it interesting that they had that particular move as tied with the Knicks, who were an absolute dumpster fire, for the worst move of the offseason. Again, this is not like random media types. This is basically GMs and then coaches and scouts from around the NBA. All right, back to the NFL. I made the case earlier in the show that the biggest question Cardinals face this preseason is how much they are willing to show of what they are going to try and do this year. Doing the show with Wolf last week, he brought up a strategy that I hope they follow. He's not convinced they're actually going to run the air raid, like the pure college version of the air raid at the NFL level. There's obviously a lot of risk doing that. So Wolf is I don't want to put words in his mouth. I mean, certainly you can listen to Doug and Wolf 6 to 10 every weekday, but I was doing the show with him last Thursday, and he threw out the idea of what if they go out there knowing they're going to run like a pro version, the pro raid, basically, when the season starts. So a lot different than what we saw last year. Maybe crazy to old-school football types, but not as crazy as running the air raid. If you're going to do that, then why not go out there and run the air raid in the preseason? Just throw everybody off. See if it works, right? I mean, go ahead and try it in the preseason. If it's terrible, then just don't run it in the regular season. But if you go into this with the idea of, hey, we're going to run the pro raid when the season, we're going to run like a more NFL version of the air raid when the season actually starts, but let's throw everybody off. Let's run the complicated, crazy version in preseason. Okay, you do that, you sort of throw everybody off. Or, I mean, again, this is only going to, your deception's only going to work for a couple weeks at most. You're basically looking to throw Detroit off in week one. But maybe you look crazy in the preseason, Detroit has to prepare for that, and you come out and run a more modified version of it in week one. And maybe Baltimore, you know, Baltimore's typically pretty good with their defensive schemes, but maybe Baltimore in week two doesn't have quite enough time to adjust either. But what that does is it gets everybody on your roster at least running some version of what you're going to run in game situations without giving everything up, without giving everything away, and without showing Detroit exactly what you're going to do in week one. I really do think that's the biggest question facing this team. Another one is what you're going to do with Patrick Peterson. We will get back into that a little bit later on in the show. When we come back, though, I want to play a bit of the interview with Chris Cartman, Sun Devil source from earlier today on Burns and Gambo. Pac-12 Media Day was today. Expectations are a lot higher this year for ASU than they were a year ago. We'll get his thoughts next. It's The Rundown with Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. All right, we've played this game once before, so I'm officially considering it a tradition at this point. We don't have a name for it, do we?
I'm the worst. I was supposed to think of one. I'm sorry. I'll think of one, I promise.
Well, right now it's just over-under. I mean, this is not the world's most complicated game. We're not splitting the atom here. But the way this goes, Michaela's going to... Actually, last time we had Kellen Olsen in here to play the game with us.
Yeah, we did.
But this is like playing Jeopardy with no other contestants right now. Michaela's going to throw out a number and a topic. I have to go over or under. We'll talk about it. It is as simple to follow along as it sounds. Before we do this, Yankees Twins right now, it's 9-6, and they might be going to the sixth right now. 55 runs scored in the first 2.5 games of that series.
I mean, you cannot look me in the face and tell me the baseball is a juice. I will laugh at you.
55 runs. Now, Minnesota scores a ton of runs. They're like on pace to shatter the single season home run mark. Have you heard this just along the lines of the ball being juiced this year? I need to double check it, but I believe there have been more home runs in baseball this year.
Speaking of.
And there's another one.
Wow, that was
from,
a perfect
from
timing.
A twin. More home runs in baseball this year than there were in 2014 all year.
Yeah, it's insane. I swear, if anyone tries to argue with me that the baseball is not juiced, I will have a heart attack. It's 100% juiced.
That's an interesting way to win an argument. It's 9-7 now, so 56 runs scored in the 2.5 games they've played.
That's Cruz's 22nd home run of the season.
It's like nothing. Mitch Garver, their catcher, hasn't even played a good chunk of the season. He has 19 home runs, unless he has another one tonight. So anyway, over-under. Any over-under you give me involving the Twins or the Yankees, I will just tell you right now I'm taking the over.
Okay. Also, a second thing before we start. Tweet us, play along with us, at the Rundown 987. Yeah, that's
yes.
Our Twitter handle?
At Rundown 987.
Okay,
I'm so
at
bad
Rundown
at giving
987.
It out.
I know, me too. And your Twitter handle is Luke Lipinski. Mine's Michaela E. Perkins.
Yes.
So yeah, play along with us.
You're supposed to make me give that out in the first segment of the show. So
I know.
Tomorrow we're
I'm
giving
sorry.
Out in the first segment.
We got to do better. No, all right. All right. So we're going to stick with the topic of the Cardinals.
Yes.
So many national outlets have the Cardinals winning less than five games. So over under, will the Cardinals win five games?
I'm gonna take the over. I can't believe I'm doing this to myself again, because last year I had them. Last year the Vegas over under was five, and I thought it was a slap in the face.
Mm.
And my thought was, no matter what, they'll win six. Then I watched them play, and like halftime of the game against Washington in week one, I was like, okay, well, this could be an issue, and it obviously was. If you're setting the over under at five, so I can't take five.
No,
I'm gonna go over. It's in a lot of ways, it's the same as last year. Rookie quarterback, rookie head coach. And it went terribly last year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Kyler Murray, and I don't even think last year was much of Josh Rosen's fault. I just think it was the whole situation. I think the defense will be better this year with Vance Joseph. And I think Kyler Murray is potentially something special. To me, I'll say six wins.
Okay, I'm going to take the under.
Okay.
I'm going to say they go 3-13.
That's so depressing.
I'm going to counter your point about Vance Joseph. As a Broncos fan, I know how terribly that went. So I don't think he helps the defense at all. And I also think not only do they have a new head coach and they have a rookie quarterback, but they're also completely switching their style of offense. And I think that it's going to be it's going to take a lot to kind of settle in and get used to it. So I'm definitely taking the under.
That's not making me feel good. Real quick, though, on Vance Joseph. When you say you don't think he'll make the defense better, do you just mean in general? Because I'm saying he'll make the defense better than last year when they ran a scheme that didn't fit the players they had.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that the 4-3 scheme wasn't
good at all.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, the 4-3 scheme was working against them. But also, though, I mean, you know, we have the issue of Patrick Peterson being out for 6 weeks. Who else on the defense besides Chandler Jones is going to give you any type of production?
I like Buddha. Suggs, maybe. I like their defense, but that was my downfall when I did last year. I thought they were going to win six games because of their defense, and they lost 13 games in no small part because of their defense. So I'll take the over, but I don't feel great.
All right. Well, sticking on the topic of defense, and just so Wolf doesn't yell at me for not talking about the defense, Chandler Jones had 13 sacks last season. Over or under that he has 13 sacks this season?
I'll take the over. I mean, obviously, if you take the over, you are assuming health, and that's why people are supposed to take the under more often than they do, but taking the under is not fun. I'll take the over because what did he have the year before? He's 17 the year before, but he's only gone over 13 that one year in 2017. I think Terrell Suggs being on the other side is going to help Chandler Jones. I do think the defense, just by the structure of the defense, will be better. And Chandler Jones, especially those first couple weeks, first 6 weeks, really is the focal point of it. So I'll go over. I'll say I don't have to give you a number, but just because I feel like I'm going to give you, I'll say 15.
Okay. All right. I'm actually going to agree with you, and I will also take the over.
Okay.
They switched the defensive scheme last year because they thought it would play to Chandler Jones's strengths better, right? That was like the whole...
Kind of.
That was like their whole reasoning.
It was supposed to play to Steve Wilkes' strengths better.
Okay. So I don't know. I think the 3-4 defense will work better for him, even though technically, don't they have like the money backer or whatever that it's not really a...
Well, they can... I mean, yeah, that's... And this is another thing Wolf will yell at you for. They typically have so many defensive backs out there anyway. It's not a traditional 4-3 versus 3-4. But
yeah.
I remember talking to Chandler Jones during camp last year, and he was talking about how he was learning, basically learning a new position, being in the three-down stance. 41 sacks for him over the 3 years since he's been a Cardinal. That's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So. I agree. Okay, so on a little bit of a lighter note, training camp has begun, and our coverage, meaning 98.7, starts tomorrow. So will the topic of Kyler Murray's height be brought up over or under 8 times during tomorrow's shows?
All of the shows combined,
yeah.
Huh?
No, it's just Bickley, Marotta, and Burns and Gambo who are out there. So not counting Doug and Wolf, will Kyler Murray's height be brought up over or under 8 times?
It will definitely be brought up. I mean, most of us have seen him in person now, so I'm going to say under 8, but it will be brought up a few times.
You're going to say under? Okay, I'm going to take the over just for argument's sake, because I think with them being out there and like watching, practicing, things like that, I think they're going to be like talking. I don't know. I just have this theory that that's going to be a huge topic on tomorrow's show. So
if he's getting passes batted down at the line of scrimmage, then it'll get brought up a lot. I think you're going to say over under 5'10 for Kyler Murray. That's what I thought the question was.
Well, I mean,
That would have been too easy.
Yeah, I was going to say, we could talk about that too if you want, but I think we both agree on that. So, all right, we're going to switch gears and go with the D-backs. So, Greinke currently has 2.5 more years left on his contract. Over or under, he will complete 1.5 more years before being traded.
So, basically, if I take the over, I'm saying they don't ever trade him. I guess they could trade him as a rental in that final year. I don't think he'll be traded in the next week. So it's a matter of, do I think he'll be traded at next year's deadline? I think it's interesting. I brought this up with Mike Farron earlier in the show. Robbie Ray, if you trade him, his value is as high now as it's ever going to be. If you wait a year on Greinke, you get to still hang around the wild card race this year because you have Zach Greinke. You get to see what he can do for you next year. And if you traded Greinke next year at the deadline, you probably get more in return because teams can't point to the fact they're taking on the salary. They're just getting a really good player, so they have to give you better prospects. So he's not getting traded this year, I don't think. What's the number, 1.5?
1.5.
I will say he is on this team over 1.5 more years.
Okay.
That's a tough one.
That is a tough one. I think the biggest thing, I think the thing that makes it the toughest is his no trade. His trade clause.
That's the thing.
Because it literally eliminates half of the league.
Yep.
And it's like, well, anyone that can afford that salary is on the list.
That's the thing. It makes it really tough. That's a great point. He's pretty set in his ways, too, Zach Greinke.
He's eliminated all of the big market teams, and all of the big market teams are the ones that can afford to pay him that money. Yeah. So, I mean, where can he go?
It's going to take some maneuvering.
Can
by
you
Mike
like
Hazen.
Imagine him in an Angels uniform?
No, but I can imagine him. I think LA would be a more laid back market to play for than Philadelphia. I understand why he doesn't want to go to Philadelphia.
The players on the East Coast get eaten alive by the media.
He's not going
and the fans. No. The fans just, oh my gosh, have you? Oh yeah, it's
yes,
bad.
I have.
All right. So David Peralta just returned from the IL, and he currently has 9 home runs this season. Over or under, he finishes with 16 home runs this season.
Do they have to be with the Diamondbacks? Like, what if he gets traded to the Cubs in 3 days?
For argument's sake, let's say he stays on the Diamondbacks for the rest of the season.
Okay. So 16. 73. He's missed 27. Yeah, I'll take the over on 16. You know what? I'll take the over on 16 for the year, whether he's a Diamondback or not.
What if he's not a Diamondback?
Well, then it depends where he goes. But, yeah, I'll take the over either way. Because he hit 30 last year.
Yes.
He's only gone over 16 twice in his career, though. 17 back in 2015 and 30 last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care what uniform he's wearing. He just has to stay on the field. He's missed so many games this year. But, because, I mean, he could have one good week where he hits 4 or 5 in that week, and then he's basically there. So I'll take the over.
I'll just take the under, just again, for argument's sake. I think injuries have really gotten the best of David, unfortunately, this season. I mean, you hate to see it. You never want to see someone injured, but I think it's going to be kind of hard for him to kind of get back in a groove and find that rhythm again. So I will take the under. Okay, last question.
I think I took the over on all of them so far.
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
Wow.
I'll take the under here.
Very predictable,
yeah,
Mr. Lipinski.
What is it?
So with the trade line again, the trade deadline again approaching, over or under, 3 Diamondbacks players will be traded at the deadline. 3.
Does this count like if they throw in a minor league player?
No.
Okay.
Currently on the major league roster.
3 is a good number. Let's see. I mean, they could feasibly be sellers and not move more than 3 guys. But I will take the over. I'm starting to really think they're going to move Ray.
Who do you think they're going to move? So if you say you're going to do the over,
Do you think they're going to move? I think Greg Holland is somebody you could move because he's not signed. Any of the guys that aren't signed, so like Holland, Adam Jones, even Dyson, none of those guys are signed past this year. So I would say at least one of them moves. If they move Robbie Ray, then that might open a situation where you're then trading somebody else to have a starting pitcher that you can use this year. Like Robbie Ray might be part one of a bigger trade.
Right.
I mean, he would be the biggest part of it. But so, yeah, I'll take the over. If they trade Ray, they're going to have to go over.
Okay. I think I'm going to take the over as well.
Okay.
I'll agree with you.
It can't be. I don't think it'll be one or two. It might be three, but I'll go.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I guess three might have been a...
No, that's what you want. You want the number right in the middle. It's tough, so...
Yeah. I think, obviously, you know how I feel about the Diamondbacks. I think that they need to be sellers, so I'm hoping that they can kind of get some good return for the players that they maybe sell. I don't know. Obviously, I have no idea what they're going to do, but yeah, I've definitely made my position clear that they need to be sellers.
You've been firmly on the seller side for a month now. I don't want them to trade Robbie Ray just for the sake of trading him. I don't think they will. I think Mike Hazen's one of the sharper GMs in sports, but to me, if they trade Robbie Ray, they're getting some significant pieces back. All right, final segment of the show here. Luke Lipinski with you. Michaela Perkins behind the glass. Before we get into D-backs, I want to read a few more of these responses. I don't know why this fascinates me this year more than any other, but just the standards that people have set for the different teams here in the Valley. And maybe it's because of that ESPN story earlier today where they said the Suns signing that Rubio is basically just setting yourself up for mediocrity. I mean... My first thought when I read that was like, I'm cool with mediocrity this year from the Suns. Last year wasn't mediocre. The year before wasn't mediocre. The year before wasn't mediocre. Mediocrity is not the ultimate goal, but it is a step in the right direction. So I threw out mine on Twitter, and I mentioned them on the show earlier. For me, success is the Cardinals winning six or more and the offense looking good for beyond this year. For the Coyotes, for me, it's making the playoffs. For the Suns, it's winning 30 games and DeAndre Ayton taking another step in his development. And for the D-backs, it's either make the wild card or have a completely restocked farm system. They're not that far. We had Mike Farron on in the first hour. He was talking about the farm system and how much better it is just in the last, 2.5 years since Mike Hazen took over. Fangraphs has them ranked 7th as of today. Jeff Passan had a story, and it wasn't even about ranking the farm systems, but he was just talking about potential trades at the deadline. This was like a week or two ago, and he described the D-backs farm system as one of the best in baseball now. So they've turned it around quickly, but if they do trade a guy like Robbie Ray or whatever, that's obviously going to up the expectations for the farm system that much more. Couple of the responses, read some of them earlier in the show, but like Tony James wrote in, Phoenix Rising, championship. The Phoenix Rising haven't lost a game in forever. At this point, my expectations for them are that they don't lose games at this point. A couple Coyotes ones thrown in here. Let's see.
Speaking of the Rising, do you know how many more dollar beer nights they have?
Well, I can try to look that. They've got at least two, right?
Can you imagine if they go undefeated on dollar beer nights for the entire season?
I think they have three more, if I remember.
They'll
correctly.
Never be able to get rid of that promo.
No, they should just do it every night. That might be extreme.
I don't know
anyway.
If the Phoenix PD is going to enjoy that.
Yeah, I don't know if they'd love that. Let's see. Tall Dave. Definitely agree with the Coyotes take. Expectations are high this season. Healthy team, arguably two number ones in net, brought in some scoring, etc. Anything less than the playoffs could be considered a bust, in my humble opinion, of course. Look, I mean, I detailed this doing the hockey show that we do here on the station, the Natural Hat Trick podcast. We were going through if there's a way where the Coyotes could improve and miss the playoffs still. They missed the playoffs by 4 points last year. They should be even better this year. It is possible, I guess, the bar to make the playoffs in the West could get raised and you would need like 96 points. I think 96 actually even missed in the East last year. So maybe they jump from 88 to 95 points and still miss the playoffs. Then I wouldn't consider that a bust. But right here, right now on July 24th, I expect that team to make the playoffs. If they don't, I don't think it's going to be because they don't take a step forward. I think it's just going to be because the rest of the Western Conference gets that much better. Back to the D-backs, too. With Robbie Ray, the value to trade him is about as high as it's ever going to be right now. You could make, I guess, an argument that let him pitch against the Marlins this weekend and have him go out there and be dominant because he's facing the Marlins, and maybe that'll raise it a little bit more. But like with Greinke, I really do think waiting a year and trading him raises his value because then teams aren't going to have to pay much of the salary. They're going to have to give you players. With Ray, the value is higher, obviously, this year. If you are going to move him, if you don't think he's a part of your future, then now's the time to do it. And it might really be like now, as in like the next 48, 72 hours is the time to do it. Because even though he's probably better than some of these other pitchers that are out there, you look at the names like Marcus Stroman, Madison Bumgarner, Trevor Bauer, and maybe he's not better than all of them. But once a couple of them get dealt, that's going to start taking teams off the market, obviously, for a pitcher, and then that's going to kill your chance at a bidding war. So I know there are certainly a lot of Diamondbacks fans that don't want to trade Robbie Ray. I don't think you do it just for the sake of doing it, but if you've decided he's not in your long-term future and you're getting really good offers, I'm just saying you probably can't wait until next Wednesday, July 31st, to pull off that deal. You want to make it before some of these other pitchers land and other teams get rid of that need. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thanks to Mike Farron for joining us. Thanks to Michaela Perkins behind the glass. Thanks to you for listening. I'm Luke Lipinski. It's been The Rundown on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.